Good evening, everyone. Firstly, thank you to the host, to my wife, and kids, Batsheva and Yocheved, for hosting and organizing. And thanks to all of you for the opportunity to give a shir and bring some kedusha and bracha into the home. So, Mirza Hashem, you should have a wonderful winter ahead, a long winter ahead until the upcoming Purim. We should have a lot of nachas, bracha, ava, simcha as we go through this winter. Now, the title of the shir is a bit of a loaded topic. People misread it to say, what is the meaning of life? It wasn't quite that loaded, but it's how to make life meaningful, which is a little bit less than that. I'd like to discuss something that perhaps many of you, myself, others, are feeling, certainly this time of the year. You know, many young men, women had the opportunity to spend time in Israel, a fortunate opportunity many have had to learn, to spend the year of a life-changing experience for some. Others, it was a natural progression wherever they were holding in high school and moved on to the next stage. Some gained a lot from this year in Israel, others not as much. But this was a year that many who had the opportunity to think, to put some thought, to contemplate for a full year, what exactly are we doing with our lives, even though we were young when we spent time in Israel. The relevance of religion, the relevance of God in our life, Torah, mitzvahs, Israel, family, friends. It was a wonderful opportunity many had the zechus of doing. Now, most of us here are at a different stage in life, and we can't just simply take off a full year, take off from work, take off from family, to really think about what our purpose is in life, what are we doing here on this world. Be it because of family responsibilities, work, some other barrier not allowing us to just take a full year off to think about what we're doing here. So now that we have these feelings that we're kind of stuck, we're clogged, we're cornered in on a path that makes us seem like it's too late, too hard to change, too hard to infuse any kedusha, any relevance of God in this world, we feel this lack of growth, the lack of connection to Hashem, lack of learning, no time to attend shiurim, busy with work, busy with family, no time for self, no time for davening, no time for mitzvahs, all these different feelings makes us feel kind of stuck and nowhere to move ahead. Sometimes women feel even more distant than men do, even though men also feel this way. You know, typically women don't go to daven every single day like men do. They don't have the opportunity to go to daf yomi shiur or learn with a chavrusa late at night. Sometimes women do have the opportunity, but typically speaking, women don't have that opportunity so often to go to shiur like men do. So women feel like they're lacking a lot more than the men do. But don't get me wrong, men also feel this way. Many men have spoken to me about their lack of connection, even though they are going to davening and they are going to shiur. And sometimes they're just too tired to go learn, and they're too tired to go daven or to go to minyan, and they feel stuck. And how do you get out of that routine of feeling stuck in your growth in ruchnius? Now, Yom Tovim are great opportunities we have sprinkled throughout the calendar. It makes it much easier when we have a yontif. There's vacation, of course. We're off from work, those who work. We have time to focus on davening and shul. We have the excitement of new mitzvos, whether it be, you know, that first night sitting in the sukkah, that exciting feeling of sitting in the sukkah the very first night, or maybe the first night of the Seder. Those feelings we have, we're walking to shul, all full, wearing our slippers, going to Yom Kippur here in Kol Nidre, or dipping the challah in the honey. These types of feelings we all have, which engender this excitement within us, this sense of inertia and this momentum building off the Yom Tovim, help out, but it's only a few times throughout the year. And, you know, now we're in the depth of the winter. In Teves, we just finished Hanukkah last week, and now there's nothing ahead for quite some time. And this year, further than most years, it's 3.5 months until the next Yom Tov, a Purim. So now it's really dry. There's a big drought. There's no Yom Tovim to excite us. The nights are the longest in the winter. And the studies say that those who suffer from depression, it's the worst during this time of the year because it's so dark and it's gloomy, it's lonely, it's sad. So how are we supposed to deal with this depression, this darkness, especially this time of year when all the Yom Tovim are behind us and we're stuck in whatever we are in, you know, in life, with work, with family? There's no connection. There's no sense of growth. We have our routine every single day. We go through the regular routine, whether it be work or whatever we do all day, but we're kind of stuck with that same repetition, the same level of routine. Cooking dinners, doing laundry, cleaning up the mess, dirty dishes, dirty clothing on the floor, whatever it is that we're doing all day, how do we feel any connection, sense of growth, sense of kedusha in our everyday routine. So there's an interesting Gemara in Brachos. Now, the Gemara in Brachos is talking about for men, but this applies to women, as I'll show in a second. There's a debate how man should have his day scheduled. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai thinks that man should spend the entire day learning, the entire day in Kollel, because he thinks if a man was engaged in working, there'd be no time to learn. So therefore, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai thinks every single man in this world should be sitting in Kollel and learning. And if a person were to be working, it sounds like it's very b'dieved, and perhaps even frowned upon if a person spent the day working. That's the impression that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai gives. Now, in contrast to that, Rabbi Shmuel comes along and says, not true. He thinks a person, a man, should have derech eretz. Now, derech eretz here does not mean derech eretz proper midos. It means derech eretz, the way of the land, working the land. And doesn't only mean being a farmer. It means getting a job, having parnasa. He thinks what we call Torah im derech eretz. You have to have this balance of learning, spirituality, ruchnius, and gashmius, and working. You have to have that proper balance. So on one hand, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai thinks you have to learn all day. And Rabbi Shmuel thinks there has to be this proper balance. So how do we paskin? What's the bottom line? So Abaye comes along. Abaye is one of the later Amoraim, one of the later Rabbanim who were found in the Gemara. And he says that many people have attempted to follow the opinion of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and learn all day, and they were unsuccessful. And others, many others, have tried successfully to follow Rabbi Shmuel of having a proper balance of work and learning, and they were very successful. And it seems from this Gemara that we should paskin, that there should be this healthy balance of work and learning. Now, we're not getting to that topic. It's a different topic about kolels and guys working and learning. But we see from the Gemara, at least, that according to Rabbi Shmuel, which is how we seem to paskin, there should be this level of learning and working. Okay. So, derech eretz is very important. Now, not derech eretz in the way of midos, but derech eretz in working the land, making a parnasa. So that means there's a value in working. There's a value in doing something what I'll call right now as mundane. Something mundane, working, doing something other than learning, other than mitzvos, seems to be very valuable. So there's an interesting story that Rav Ari Levine, many of you probably heard of, the big gadol, living in Eretz Yisrael, was the father of Rabbi Simcha Batsheva Kanievsky, and he was known not only for his greatness in Torah, but his greatness in sensitivity. He was a real tzaddik. And he was a principal in a yeshiva. And one day, Rav Ari's son, Rav Chaim Yaakov, came to visit his father. And his father used to sit in his office, looking out the window during recess, watching all the kids play. So Rav Chaim Yaakov came into the office, and Rav Ari Levine says to him, look outside, tell me, what do you see? All the boys were playing. He said, what do you see? So he says, I see that boy over there really running, a lot of energy. He must be really vibrant and strong in learning. I see the other boy there sitting on the side, not playing and learning. He must be a big, big masmid. So Rav Ari Levine says, I see something completely different. I see that boy over there, his shoes are ripped. He must need a new pair of shoes. And then I see that boy over there, he doesn't have a sweater on. He probably needs some clothing at home. And I see that boy over there, he's very, very skinny. He probably didn't eat lunch today. I need to go check on these three boys. He wasn't concerned with the ruchnis. Now that's obviously very important. But he was concerned with their gashmis, their clothing, their well-being, their physical state. Because you need that sense of derech eretz. You need the mundane. If there's no guf, if there's no body to work with, then the ruchnis means nothing. You need that proper balance of derech eretz in Torah. But if a person is supposed to work all day, and you need parnasa, you have to be healthy, you need to eat, you need to be clothed. So how do you get any level of kedusha while a person is doing something other than a mitzvah, other than learning? Where is the kedusha? Okay, we need it. You need to have the proper eating, and you need to be healthy. But when you're involved in those gashmius things, where is their kedusha there? Yes, you need it to accomplish kedusha, but while I'm working, while making a parnasa, is there any value, is there any kedusha in and of itself other than to get me to a level of being healthy? So, an interesting story. I was in the car today with a Talmud of mine. Gary Slikowski drove me to YU this afternoon. And he shared with me a story that here he heard from Rav Waxman. And the story is, he wasn't sure if it was about the Sfas Emes or some other Rebbe. And the Sfas Emes, we'll just say for now, once said on Yom Kippur to his entire Kehillah, if anybody wants to know whether their tefillahs were answered this Yom Kippur, come to me after davening, I'll let you know. So after Yom Kippur was over, all the Hasidim were very, very nervous to know whether they were answered or not. They preferred not to go to the Sfas Emes, but there was one Chassid who wanted to really know whether his tefillah was answered. So afterwards, he built up enough courage to go to the Sfas Emes. So he says, I want to know where my tefillah is answered. So the Sfas Emes asks him, well, what did you daven for? So I davened, you know, I work very hard. I'm very busy, and I only have 1 hour to learn. I wish I had more time to learn. So Sfas Emes closed his eyes. He's connecting to whatever he's connecting to in Shemaim. A few moments pass, and he finally opens his eyes up and he says, I'm sorry to tell you that your tefillah was not answered. So the chassid was very distraught, and he proceeded to ask the Rebbe, so why was my tefillah not answered? I had proper kavana, I did everything the right way, I did a complete tshuva. Why are my tefillahs not answered? So he said, don't be so worried. It was actually for a good reason that your tefillah wasn't answered. Hashem Yisbarach finds that your 1 hour of learning is so impressive to him that he prefers that 1 hour over the 2 hours that you would otherwise have. Because the Mesiras Nefesh that you go through, the mental strain that you have from working all day, and the exhaustion that you're willing to go out to learn at night, just 1 hour is so impressive to him. That Mesiras Nefesh is better than the 2 hours, 3 hours you would have spent otherwise. Now the lesson applies not only to one who learns, but this applies to any Davar Shiva Kedusha. If a woman is bending over backwards to try to squeeze in Shemona Esrei to daven, just for a few minutes, whatever she's involved in the rest of the day, whether it be working or family, that few minutes where she gives up for Davar Shiva Kedusha itself is tremendous, tremendous amount of Mesiras Nefesh that HaKadosh Baruch Hu recognizes. If a woman's bending over backwards to cook late Thursday night to get in some level of cooking for Shabbos, or she's working all week Friday, she gets home 30 minutes before Shabbos and gets the food in the oven for Shabbos, that's a Davar Shiva Kedusha that has tremendous Mesiras Nefesh, which is so dear to Hashem. So you see, when a person works so hard, and they're still able to squeeze in those moments, even though they might be small moments and little moments, it's so precious to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that adds so much value to it. So we see those moments of Kedusha are so precious, but still, how are we supposed to view the rest of the time when we're busy working or taking care of our kids or whatever we're eating and drinking? How do we understand that there's Kedusha in those mundane things that we do every single day? So there's another machlokas between Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Shmuel in Gemara Menachos. And they're debating what the pasuk means, v'yigisa bo yomim v'layla, which literally means that a person should be engaged in learning all day, all night. I'm sorry it's so much about learning today, but all these apply to women as well, even not in the context of learning. So the pasuk says, v'yigisa bo yomim v'layla, that a person is supposed to be engaged in learning all day, all night. How do you do that? So Rabbi Shmuel says very simply, if you learn all day, all night, then you're behind the pasuk of v'yigisa bo yomim v'layla. If you're learning all day, there's no time for Chachma Yevanis. There's no time, he says, for learning Greek. There's no time for learning secular subjects. You have to learn all day, all night. And that's how you get the pasuk, V'yigisa bo yomim v'layla. Now comes along Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. An interesting twist here. He says that all you have to do is say Shema in the morning, and you say Shema in the evening, and it says if you're learning all day long. By saying Shema in the morning and Shema in the evening, you're learning all day long. You're Mekai in the pasuk, V'yigisa bo yomim v'layla, which doesn't make any sense. I could say Shema in the morning and play basketball the rest of the day. I could go, you know, say Shema in the morning and go out shopping the rest of the day. And Shema in the evening, it's as if I'm saying, I'm learning the entire day. So before we answer the question, I want to move to an interesting question that Tosos raises in the Gemara Brachos. Tosos asks the following question. When it comes to the halacha of sitting in the sukkah, we know that when a person goes to eat in the sukkah, he's supposed to say bracha leishei basukkah. And when the meal's over and you go out to do whatever you're doing, and you come back later on that evening or later that day, and you have another meal, you say a new bracha of leishei basukkah. So those that ask, why when it comes to saying a bracha on leishei basukkah, you need a new bracha each time you have a new meal? In contrast to that, when it comes to birchas haTorah, men and women alike, we say bracha in the morning. And then you go out to work or whatever you're doing all day. And then at nighttime, you come back to learn. And you open up a chumash, you open up whatever you're learning, and you don't have to say new bracha. But there's a tremendous hefsek, a separation from the time you said the bracha in the morning until 13 hours later when you learned at night. So when it comes to leishei basukkah, you could say you have to say a bracha each new time that you're eating, but birchas haTorah, you say one in the morning and that covers the entire day. It doesn't make any sense. So what Tosos answers is that the very fact that a person has an obligation to learn all day long, the pasuk says, "V'yigisa bo yomim v'layla." You have to learn all day long. That very obligation, even though he's not actually or she's not actually learning, that obligation alone, being cognizant and aware that I have to, that I'm supposed to, that's enough to keep that brach in the morning for the entire day. I know I can't. I need to work. I need to do other things. I need to eat. I need to drink. I'm not learning. But knowing that I'm supposed to, that carries the bracha from the beginning until the end of the day. Now, it's an amazing concept. It might make a person feel very underachieved, though, that I should be learning and I'm not really learning. That's never a reason to reject an answer just because it doesn't make us feel good, and certainly not when Toso says this. But there is another answer which I think could be a greater takeaway for each of us here. And that's offered by the Chavetz Chaim and the Mishneh Berurah. The Chavetz Chaim suggests, he takes this idea a step further. It's not simply because I have an obligation and that I'm aware that I'm supposed to be learning all day, but he says, I am actually learning all day long. How? You have to be aware of halacha in every step of the day. You have to be aware of everything according to halacha, the way you eat, the way you drink, the way you go to the bathroom, the way you dress, the way you speak to people. Everything we do during the entire day is itself following the halacha. We don't only learn to learn, we learn lilmo lasos. We learn in order to accomplish, in order to do. So when we're continuing to, we say bracha in the morning, birchas haTorah, and then we go ahead to work, we go ahead to eat, we go ahead to shop, there are halachas that are accompanying all these different mundane things that we're doing. Everything we're doing is a continuation of the chiv to learn, the gisabo yom v'layla. Their halachas talk about all these things, how to get dressed, how to go to the bathroom, how to put your shoes on. Everything we do, which seem to be mundane, there are halachas that are attached to these things. So if we're aware, when we put the shoes on the right way, there's halacha that gives what seems to be mundane tremendous amount of kedusha. And everything you do throughout the day, there is halacha to everything. Now, it shouldn't make a person go crazy, but a person should be aware that there is an ar halachas that apply to everything a person does. Now, women don't have the obligation to learn. But at the same time, they have the obligation to follow halacha and follow mitzvahs. So it may not be as strong as a chiv as men have, but they have an obligation, of course, to follow all the halachas. They obviously can't steal. They obviously have to be nice to people. They have to follow halachas that are relevant to them. Cooking, kashrus, everything we could do can be infused with a tremendous amount of kedusha by simply following the halacha. And that following the halacha is going to be a continuation of that bracha that we say in the morning. So that's why when it comes to leishev sukkah, when we leave the sukkah, there's no obligation anymore. It's done. And when we decide to come back, we need to say new bracha. Birchas haTorah is very different. Everything we do is a continuation of that Torah that we started in the morning. There's a well-known story from Rav Gusman. Rav Gusman was a tremendous Rosh Hashiva dying in Eretz Yisrael. And there's a famous story, but I heard this from one of his Talmidim who said he was there during this event. And Rav Gusman would water the grass, the plants, the flowers that was outside the yeshiva that he taught in. And every single day the Talmidim would pass by and see the Rosh Hashiva watering the grass. And finally they realized maybe this isn't the right thing to do. The Gemara tells us that a Rav, a Gadol Hador, cannot do any public malacha. Building a sukkah might be a different thing, it's a mitzvah involved, but you shouldn't see him schlepping packages inside. They shouldn't do anything in the public eye because they're Rosh Hashiva. There's a certain amount of Kavod HaTorah we have to show them. So he said, listen, Rebbe, you know, we could water the grass for you. Maybe you really shouldn't be doing this. He says, no, I have to do this. I insist. And then he explains that when he was in the Holocaust, when he was in Vilna, so the Nazis came to his town. So he was, before they actually overtook the city that he was in, he was forced to escape to the forest. And he had remembered 6 months earlier, he went around with his Rebbe, Rav Chaim Ozer, and he would be learning, walking in the fields. And every 5 minutes he said, you see that little grass there, or that little plant, or that little flower, or that fruit? That's healthy to eat, and that over there is poisonous. And he thought it was a bit strange that his Rebbe was interrupting every 5 minutes with these little advices about what to eat and what not to eat. And then he realized 6 months later, that's what saved him when he was hiding in the forest, running from the Nazis. And out of a karas hatov to the plant life, to the fruits, to the vegetables, to the grass, to the trees, he decided that he wanted to give back and show a karas hatov to plant, to water, take care of the field, the grass, the garden. Now this obviously is a lesson of karas hatov that goes beyond people, it goes also to the inanimate, but also it tells us that even things such as watering and planting, even those things which are so mundane, can be infused with a tremendous amount of kedusha. Rav Gusman took watering grass, watering plants, watering vegetables, he took it to the next level and added tremendous amount of kedusha, what would otherwise be a mundane activity. That means everything we could do in this world, anything that's mundane, can be infused with a proper machshava, the proper kavana, you could have a tremendous amount of kedusha with this. Now the same goes true with working. Making a parnasa is also considered a continuation of learning as well. There's so many halachas that apply to working. There's a whole chelak. There are four halakim. There are four sections of Shulchan Aruch. One section is called Choshen Mishpat. Choshen Mishpat has all the halachas that are relevant to work, to business. Obviously not stealing. What's considered an acquisition? Buying and selling. Now, just today, someone asked me an interesting shaila that his daughter had agreed verbally to someone that he was going to buy an old textbook for $100. And then later on, she found online one for that same one for $50. Can she go back on that agreement that she had with the other friend, even though it was only a verbal agreement? These things are discussed in Choshen Mishpat. These things happen all the time. And the Gemara in Shabbos tells us that after Meiv Esrim, we're going to be asked a number of questions. And the very first question that we're going to be asked is, Nasas v'nasata be'emuna, did you do business with honesty? Did you properly track your time? Did you bill your time properly? Did you go in a taxi cab for your own personal use but charge it to the company? Did you overcharge your dinners? Did you waste time surfing the internet when you're supposed to be billing the hour to the client? Everything we do throughout the entire day must be done al pi halacha. And therefore that too, when we're working, is also viewed as a continuation of halacha, of Torah. We say bracha in the morning, and we go to work. That's not an interruption of Torah. That's a continuation of the bracha that we started with. It's another keem of higisa bo yomam v'layla. I love getting shilas from people during the workday. I mean, during their workday, not my workday. I don't really work. But during their workday, I love getting their shilas. Because it means that they're paying attention to what they're doing. So just like last week, someone asked me a question. He was fleishik. He had whatever he had for lunch. He went to the Dunkin' Donuts and got a cappuccino. He had some almond milk placed in the cappuccino. Then he was concerned maybe there's some milk from the previous cup that was used, and maybe it's really dairy and he can't have it. So I love those questions. That means people, when they're learning, when they're rather working, they're still focused on halacha throughout the entire day. I get many questions about, could I use the hot water urn or the coffee maker in the office? Do I put a mezuzah on my office door? Does this require, we have partners, one's Jewish, one's not Jewish. All these questions are people that are focused on learning in Torah and halacha while they're working. So working also is considered a continuation. As long as you're following halacha, this too is part of it. You could see a lot from a person when they ask shilas, how much Yiras Shamayim they have. Someone asked me a few days ago about a particular girl in the shul for a shidduch. So I said, I don't really know her that well, but she asked me one question a few months ago, and I know from the question she had asked me, she's a Yiras Shamayim. You could tell from the way people ask questions. I'm not judging people from the questions that they ask, but you see a lot from the way people ask questions, so it's important that whatever we do, whether it's shopping, whether it's working, eating, I get shilas of Hilchas Brachos questions all the time. Does this granola bar require Adama or does it require Mizonos? Kids text me these pictures of all these different foods. I don't know what they're talking about. Some guy asked me about millet the other day. Millet? Millet, yes, I don't know what millet is. So he sent me a picture of millet. I still didn't know the answer. But these are people are focused throughout their entire day. That's the focus to what exactly the halacha is. Now next week we're starting Sefer Shmos. In the beginning of Shmos we're introduced to Shifra and Pua. And Rashi tells us that the namesake of Shifra and Pua come from the fact that Shifra was Mishaperes HaSavlad, massaged and soothed the baby. And Pua came from, Pua would coo and make the babies feel comfortable, relaxed, calm them down. Now these names you would imagine for Yocheved and Miriam, according to one medrash of Yocheved and Miriam, these were their other names, who were the matriarchs of Klal Yisrael, the mother of Moshe Benu, the sister of Moshe Benu. Miriam was one of the only seven women prophets that we have. You would imagine maybe they should have a more chashuv nickname other than just taking care of the baby, the Shifra and the Pua. But the fact is that they were doing something seemingly mundane. It was very big and helpful, obviously, raising children, giving birth to children, helping women give birth. But even these things that were mundane, they were called by these mundane activities. Weinberg once mentioned to me that every coup, every opportunity that a mother has to take care of their child or someone else's child, now Shifra and Pua weren't only taking care of their own children, they were taking care of the entire Klal Yisrael's children. Every moment they're doing is a davar shebekedusha. Even though it seems mundane, giving a bottle to a child or changing a diaper, all these things have a tremendous amount of kedusha, and you see that from their names. Yocheved and Miriam were called Shifra and Pua. You would think a more chashuv name, but no. Even these activities, their jobs, their professions, was a tremendous amount of kedusha. Now, there are some professions that we're not able to see how we help people out, where the kedusha is. You could certainly see with Shifra and Pua, the Davar Shekudusha, how they helped society, how they helped Klal Yisrael. There are other jobs that are not as easy to see what we're doing. If you're an accountant, if you're an actuary, you may not see how you're helping people out directly. That's not why I left. For those who don't know, I was an actuary for a few months. But a few months ago, my son Zevi had broken his arm. He fell off a monkey bar. Well, he insists on telling me it wasn't really a monkey bar. It was some type of a hybrid between a monkey bar and a rock climbing thing. I don't know. Either way, he fell off and he broke his arm. And my wife was called to yeshiva to pick him up. And obviously, Zevi was in a lot of pain, and he was very scared to go to the hospital, to go to the emergency room. So my wife picked him up, and she tried calming him. And she started reciting this whole routine that Zevi had learned from a mohr of his a couple of years ago, a whole thing about Kriya Shema Lamita that she had taught the children. And it goes something like this. You could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you say, Hine lo yinom v'lo yishan shomer yisrael one time. Yeah? And then you say, Hine lo yinom v'lo yishan shomer yisrael two times. And then you say it a third time, and then you say, Hashem never rests, Hashem never sleeps, Hashem is always watching over us. Close enough, right? So that routine, Zevi immediately felt protected, Hashem was watching over him, he felt watched, and he was very relaxed after Randy went through that routine with him. So a few weeks ago, she was in yeshiva, and she bumped into this teacher. This is 2 years after he had learned this. And she went over to the teacher and said, you know, this was very helpful. That whole routine that you taught Zevi, I used it in the car to help him relax. And the teacher began to cry, very much appreciative of the compliments, saying that it's very rare for her to hear these compliments. People always call to complain, but never do they call to compliment any of her doing. So we see that this teacher herself had a problem, you know, feeling proud of what she did, even though we know every teacher does so much for the children. That it's so obvious that they're helping out Klal Yisrael. Imagine anyone who doesn't teach, how hard it is to see how they're connecting to Klal Yisrael, even though they really are. But every job, as I pointed out, every job has Kedusha within. Every breath, every act we do, no matter how mundane or irrelevant it seems, as we follow Halacha, there's tremendous amounts of Kedusha in every action, every job, everything we do throughout the day. There's a concept in Gemara and Chazal called Tikkun Olam, fixing the world. We have to fix the world, we need to build streets, bridges, a functioning society, a government, a successful economy. Every job has some level of tikkun olam. Everything that we do, it could be an accountant, it could be a lawyer. These things are part of tikkun olam, fixing the economy, fixing, helping clients, helping the world in some way. This is part of building up the world. The Gemara says there's one profession that doesn't qualify as tikkun olam. That's a professional gambler. He's not doing anything productive to society, so he's possible. He cannot be an aide. He cannot be a witness because he's not helping the world. He doesn't know what it means to fix the world. For you to be a witness, you have to know what it might means to do tikkun olam. You have to be able to fix the world. A gambler is not able to have that type of sensitivity. He's disqualified. But every other profession, in some way, somehow, they are doing some level of tikkun olam, even though it seems maybe very distant from what we're actually doing. There is some level of tikkun olam, fixing the society, fixing the economy. Somehow it's helping us out. The Pasuk tells us Adam Rishon, when he was created, it says, Milu haaretz v'chavshua, to fill the world and conquer, take over the world. Adam was told to take over the world, to conquer it, to build it up, to fix the world, to do tikkun olam, make an economy. That means when we are working, we are fixing the world. We are doing, we're b'kayin the Pasuk of v'chavshua, conquering the world, taking it over. Now, the difficult thing about this, so we see that there is an idea of connecting to Hashem, connecting to Torah, through everything that we do, whether it be work, eat, drink, every step of the way, you're supposed to connect somehow. But how do we measure this? How are we supposed to measure where we really are? Are we successful? How do you measure growth? How do you measure anything in this world? Well, to measure something, you need a measuring cup. You need something to measure by. How many mitzvahs you did? How many hours you learned? How many hours of chesed you did? How many shirim you went to? You need a quantity in order to measure success. When I used to work, we measured my success by how many hours you build to the client. But maybe that's not the right way to measure success, I don't think, when it comes to Yiddishkeit. The Mishnah Avos tells us we don't know the schar. We don't know the reward that each mitzvah gets. Now, the simple reason why we don't know the reward is because if I knew that this mitzvah of Kibbutz Ein had so much reward, I'd only do that. I wouldn't do the mitzvah of Tzitzis because there's no reward for Tzitzis. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do all mitzvahs equally, so therefore, no reward is mentioned. But maybe the point is that we're not supposed to know the reward because it's not about the reward. It's not about how many mitzvahs, how many points we're getting. It's about connecting. The mitzvahs are supposed to help us connect It's the goal of connecting. The way we get to the connection is through the mitzvah. But it's not the mitzvah itself. It's the goal of being connected, when you feel connected. You know, when I'm making parnasa to help the family or to do tikkun olam, that's a way of connecting, even though there might not be a mitzvah, though there might be still. But assuming there's no mitzvah in making money, there's no mitzvah in working, that still connects me to Hashem because I'm fixing His world. And when I eat and drink and sleep, al pi halacha, there's no mitzvah per se. I could fast all day if I wanted. But if I'm doing this al pi halacha, that's a way of connecting to Hashem. The goal is about connecting. And the Gemara tells us that if a person had a thought to do a mitzvah, and somehow he wasn't able to do the mitzvah. Let's say someone wanted to be mafresh challah. She made all the dough, and she was about to be mafresh challah, and the dog came along and ate the dough. And she missed out on the mitzvah of hafresh challah. She still gets that mitzvah, because she thought to. She did everything she was able to do. She wants to do the mitzvah, and something got in the way, she gets the mitzvah. It doesn't. If I try to shoot the basketball and it doesn't go in the basket, I don't get points for that, just trying to shoot. So the idea is that she wanted to connect. The very ratzon, desire to connect to the mitzvah, whether the mitzvah is done or not, that's really irrelevant. The ratzon itself allowed her to feel that connection, and she felt, or he felt, connected. The idea of mitzvahs is to feel connected. Everything we do is supposed to feel connected. When we eat, when we drink, al pi halacha, is to feel connected. Now the next big Yom Tov, as I mentioned, is Purim. It's a few months from now. But the Sfarim speak about that already on the previous Yom Tov, which was Hanukkah, you're supposed to learn about Purim to connect from one Yom Tov to the next. So in Rosh Hashanah, you learn about Yom Kippur to connect that to Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, you learn about Sukkot to connect it to Sukkot, and so on and so forth. So now that we just finished Hanukkah last week, it's already appropriate to start speaking about Purim and the connection of Hanukkah all the way until Purim. So there's an interesting remez in Parshas Vayeshev. Parshas Vayeshev is always Shabbos Hanukkah. And the remez is that it says in the pasuk, Tevoach Tevach V'Hachin. Tevoach Tevach, and they prepared a meal. This is in the meeting of Yosef and his brothers. They met for the first time, not knowing it was Yosef at this point. The pasuk says, and they prepared, they shechted the meal. Tevoach, the last letters of Ches, V'Hachin is a Vav, He, Chaf, Nun. Those are the letters of Chanukah. That's a hint of Chanukah in the Parsha. Now this Suda that they went on to have, the pasuk tells us, they all drink wine. This was the first time that they all drank wine since they last sold Yosef down to Mitzrayim, years ago. So drinking of wine sounds like a Sudas Purim. And the Sfas Emes says this is a remez to Sudas Purim. So the remez of Chanukah in that Parsha is in the context of a remez to Purim. So there's obviously some connection. Now they're both the two Yom Tovim that were after the Torah. They're mitzvahs, they're Yom Tovim of Dirabanan. That's some connection. But there's a stronger parallel between the two of Chanukah versus Purim. There's another remez to put this together. Parshas Emor is known to be the Parsha of the Mo'adim. All the Yom Tovim are mentioned in Parshas Emor. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Shulas, Pesach. Then after it discusses the various Mo'adim, it talks about Shemen HaMishcha, olive oil, and then talks about the Shulchan, the table of Lechma Panim in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan. So they seem very out of place of Shemen HaMishcha, and the Shulchan should not be discussed in the Parsha of all the Mo'adim. So what the Sfarim point out is that the Shemen HaMishcha is a remez to Chanukah, of course, which is one of the Yom Tovim. And the Shulchan is a remez to Purim. Why? Because Purim was a galus of Gashmis, that Haman wanted to kill us physically. Chanukah was a galus of Ruchnis, wanted to destroy us spiritually. So the Shemen HaMishcha, the olive oil, represents Chachma. Chanukah is about a celebration of Chachma, wisdom, spiritual Ruchnis. And Purim was a celebration of Gashmis, which is represented by Shulchan, a table of food, a table of Malachim. So furthermore, in the Beis HaMikdash, let's try to create a Beis HaMikdash here for a moment. So that's the east, let's say. The west is behind me. That's the south and the north. So you'd walk in from the eastern gate into the Beis HaMikdash. When you come inside, there's a big Mizbeach. You walk further in. On the south was the menorah. On the north was the Shulchan. So the Gemara in Bava Basra says, if you want to become rich, you daven to the north, because the Shulchan was there. The Shulchan represents wealth, represents Shulchan Malachim, it represents Purim, all about Gashmis. If you want to be a wise person, Chachma, you daven to the south, where the menorah was, which was all about Chanukah. Chanukah is about Ruchni, it's about Chachma, and Purim is all about the Shulchan, the Gashmis. Now this idea goes a little bit further, that we have, the Gemara Numa tells us that the Shulchan Menorah, there's also a Mizbeach HaKetoros, a small Mizbeach, aside from the big one outside, a small Mizbeach, which is between the Menorah and the Shulchan. But this mizbeach had to be pushed out of the way so the shulchan and the menorah could see each other. They had to have this dialogue, if you will. That working with each other, the shulchan, the menorah, the Purim and Chanukah, had to have some type of equilibrium with each other. So what's that equilibrium? So stay a little bit further here. So we said Chanukah is about the menorah. We have some hints that even Chanukah is connected to the shulchan. We say in the bracha, unless you're nusach svarad, we say lahalik ner shel Chanukah, which are the Rashi tables of Shulchan. Lahalik, Ner, Shel Chanukah, the first letters are all spelled as Shulchan. So we have a hint of Shulchan, of Purim, in the world of Chanukah. Also, the Gemara tells us that B'Shas HaSakana, the times of Chanukah when things became dangerous, we were no longer able to light outside, we had to light inside. And the Gemara said, B'Shas HaSakana, Miniach Al Shulchano, you place the Chanukah menorah on the table, and that's enough. So you're placing the Chanukah on the Shulchan. Now the Shulchan is about the Purim. We have the connection of Chanukah working with Purim now with the Shulchan. So there are a lot more connections. I'll say it further. That the Shulchan is Shulchan Melachim. Purim is Shulchan. Purim is all about Melachim. Achashverosh, Melech, Melech, Melech. It says all over Migdal's Esther. And Chanukah is not about Melech. It's about Aaron. It's all about Kohanim. The Achashmonaim were Kohanim. So Chanukah is all about Kohanim in the south. Chachma and Kohanim. And the Shulchan and Purim is all about Malachim in the north. Now we have, there's an overlap, there's a switch. The Gemara tells us that Melech Achashverosh wore the big day kahuna, based on the pasuk. He wore, the Melech, took the clothing of the Kohen. And the Chashmonaim, who were Kohanim, became Malachim. They were kings. They took the Purim's Malchus. So you see that overlap back and forth. We also find that Moshe and Aaron, Moshe is very much connected to Purim. He was born and died Zayin Adar. Adar is Purim. Moshe was the Melech. Purim is about Malchus. And Aaron is the Kohen. He's very much connected to the menorah. So the idea is that you have to have that proper balance of the menorah and the Shulchan. Chanukah to Purim. Chanukah is about Ruchnis and Purim is about Gashmis. And the idea is we have Chanukah. We just finished Chanukah now, or last week, of Ruchnis. Now we have a long winter ahead of us. The idea is now to take that ruchnis and apply it to all the mundane, all which seems very dark and gloomy and lonely, to apply that ruchnis within this dark winter, and apply that when we get to Purim eventually, which is all about eating and drinking, to even view that with the prism of ruchnis that we learn from Chanukah. That's the idea, that's the balance between Chanukah and Purim. Going back in full circle to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, as we learned before, that he was the one who thought a person should learn all day. He's also the person who thought that if you say Shema in the morning and say Shema in the evening, it's as if you learned all day as well. So there's one more Gemara about, there's more Gemaras, but one more Gemara I'm going to quote about him. We know Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is very much connected to Lag BaOmer. It happens to be the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Lamed Gimel, Lag 33, where this story appears. And it's a story... a story that we are most familiar with, that he went to the cave, he had to hide from the Romans, and he went to the cave to learn with his son for many, many years. And after 12 years, the Gezerah was over. There's a Gezerah out to kill Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, and finally the Roman emperor died, and Eliyahu Navi came out and announced outside the cave, who's going to tell Rabbi Shimon that he's okay to leave? So he heard Eliyahu say this, and he left the cave and went out. And then he and his son started looking all over, and he saw people farming and working the land. He said, people are not learning, they're busy working the land, and they turned into fire. And he started burning everything they saw. And a bas kol came out and says, what are you guys doing to my world? You're destroying my world. Get back into the caves. And they were sent back into the caves, and they thought, a person who gets punished, a person who dies, is a rasha, he has to stay 12 months in Gehenna. So we should stay in the cave for another 12 months. 12 months pass, and they come back again, and his son, Rabbi Lazar, was not able to control his fire. He started destroying things. Rabbi Shimon fixed everything. He kept on fixing everything Rabbi Lazar would ruin. So Rabbi Shimon was fixing the world. That initially he thought it was all about learning. And then he realized that that's not the idea of the world. You have to fix the world. It's about tikkun olam. When people are able to work the land and farm the land, that's a wonderful thing. So then there's this tremendous maisa that happens. They're walking along the way. They just left the cave. And an elderly man runs by, running Erev Shabbos. So he says to them, "No, you know, why are you carrying these two hadassim? You have two hadassim in his hand. Very strange thing." He said, "It's a lechavad shabbos." Okay, fine, very nice. You have some hadassim, makes it smell very nice. Why do you need two? He says, "Well, I need one for shomer, one for zachar." So a wonderful thing. They turned to each other, Rabbi Shimon and his son. This is a beautiful thing. They were so elated by this response, and they moved on. I'm trying to find the line here for a second. They said, "Kama chavivin mitzos al Yisrael." How dear are mitzvahs to Yisrael that he's making a one hadas for the shomer, one hadas for the zachar. Now this is a made-up minhag. This minhag doesn't exist anywhere. But they're so happy about such a minhag. So this reminds me of people make fun of chasidisha minhagim sometimes. Some chasidisha customs seem like they're made up, and sometimes they are made up. But when they're made up, they're not made up from nowhere. They're made up with some type of kedusha involved. You might not find them in any of the Sfarim, in any of the Gemaras, any of the Rishonim, but when you look at something seemingly mundane and create your own type of Chiddush, you infuse some level of Kedusha to something like Hadassim, and you connect it to Shamar Zachar. It might seem crazy, but you can add Kedusha to something so mundane. Now, what has to be said is, segulas and wonderful customs like this are very important, but it can't be the Ikar, of course. The Ikar has to be following Halacha and Mitzvahs and Torah, and then you could go along and add things as well. Those who think segulas are the only thing important and nothing else is important, that's when things get problematic. But if you think Torah and mitzvahs and halachas, okay. Then you can start finding your own chasidish and minhagim. That's a wonderful thing, like we see Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai himself did. That means anything mundane in this world, again, eating, drinking, working, taking care of children, whatever it might be, that all has a tremendous amount of kedusha as long as you have the right perspective of things. So now in conclusion, we're in the darkness of winter, as we said, the month of Tevis, but we started the month of Tevis off with a few lights of Hanukkah. The avoda, the next few months, is to take that light of Hanukkah, take that or, maintain it, continue it, ride it through the rest of the winter, bring us to Purim, and answer up to this challenge, the challenge of how to deal with a very slow month, a slow winter. We start at the beginning, we feel clogged, we feel cornered, we're not growing at all. Take that light and help us grow. It's to find that hidden light that's in everything we do, in the mundane, the eating, the drinking, the working. Find that light in everything we do. And Mirat Hashem, Yishbizoch, to find that light, find that hidden ruchnis, and feel continued connectivity to Hashem Yisbarach.